Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Go, man. Tear it up, dude.
You're listening to Here's the Catch with David Lombardi, Matt Barrows, and Dennis Brown on the Athletic Podcast Network.
For the first time in a game that actually means something since the NFC Championship game in January 2020, there are going to be fans back in Levi's Stadium. And the 49ers are making sure that they make this a whole extravaganza. They're going to be wearing some of the uniforms that Dennis used to wear, and I'm not really sure if Dennis likes them or not, but that's a different story. 49ers wearing a 1994 throwbacks. I know Dennis won a Super Bowl in those uniforms, so they're going back to something that means a lot to the franchise. Dennis, I forgot, are you on the side of the throwback uniforms, or are you against them?
Well, I like the red jerseys. I think they're bringing back the red jerseys. For the last couple years, they've been, talking about the white jerseys.
Oh, the white throwback. Whites that you don't like.
Dennis hates
I don't like the
white
so much.
Yeah.
Yeah, the whites, you get dirty.
Okay.
But the reds, the reds are what we won the Super Bowl in. So
okay, good.
Yeah, so I it's going to be fun to kind of see, the red jerseys and the throwback, and it's going to be exciting. Levi's is going to be jumping. We had a couple preseason games, but I think the team coming back 2-0 off a successful road trip and the Green Bay Packers in town. I think Levi's Stadium is going to be exciting. It's going to be loud, and it's going to be fun to be there. So I'm kind of looking forward to it.
I agree. I mean, every team is going through this first game with fans, for most teams really. For the 49ers, it's more special because they were banished from their home county. I forget when it was, but they spent basically the last month and a half of the season on the road. It was more grueling for them than any other team last year. And Dennis is right. Being 2-0 on top of that emotion of being home, being in front of the fans again, that's going to be a lot, I think, for Green Bay to have to deal with. These road trips, these back-to-back road trips, have been good to the 49ers. They've mostly won them. I think they're, 7-1 over the last three seasons. It's the game back that's been problematic. There's just been a fatigue level. I think they're 1-2 in those games. Remember that Atlanta game at the end of the 2019 season came after road games in Baltimore and New Orleans. So there's that factor going against the 49ers, but like I said, I think the emotional uplift from this game is going to be so high that adrenaline, whatever, carries the 49ers to a win at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's not only at home, it's in prime time. And today I thought one of the key quotes from George Kittle was that Kyle Shanahan literally gives it a little extra when it comes to play calling and play design for primetime games. George said that Kyle likes to show off a little bit under the lights on national television, so he essentially hinted that the 49ers would showcase something that Green Bay didn't expect. And they may actually have to showcase something that Green Bay doesn't expect given the state of the running back room. We don't know who's going to start, who's going to be the second stringer, third stringer, whatever. There's a chance, and Kyle Shanahan also said this earlier in the week, that the 49ers start their sixth string running back. That's how decimated the room is. Elijah Mitchell did not practice on Thursday. Trey Sermon was in a blue non-contact jersey. If neither of those two players are able to go, and with Sermon it's unpredictable because he's in a concussion protocol, so even if he looks good out there, there's a chance that something happens between now and Sunday. If neither of those two guys are available, you are indeed looking at the 49ers' sixth string running back starting. And Matt, We don't even know who that sixth stringer would be. And the sixth stringer is going to play no matter what, even if Trey Sermon's ready. So this is wild. The 49ers may have to get creative on offense.
Yeah, and they may have to hand out 68,000 rosters to the fans who attend because all these guys are brand new. Jaquez Patrick might be on the field. Kerryon Johnson might be on the field. Chris Thompson might be on the field. I think we know that Trenton Cannon, who only arrived Thursday of last week and was kind of forced into duty as a running back in Philadelphia, is going to be up. He's going to have a big role in special teams and maybe as a running back as well. I guess you can say that's a bit of an advantage for the 49ers. Packers don't know who to prepare for, but I know that Bobby Turner, the running backs coach, has been working overtime this week, getting these guys up to speed. And Dennis, I don't know whether you ever had to deal with that or your teams had when somebody is just signed and he's sort of pressed into service right away. I just don't know how much of the offense or the defense somebody like that can be expected to master.
I can't think of any situation. And it sounds like if you're a running back in college, you know, you could very well end up being a San Francisco 49ers, if, you know, the way it's been the last couple of seasons, because they just kind of run through guys in the running back room. So, you know, it's an opportunity, though. And that's what the NFL is about, right? It's about opportunity. So, you know, the next guy up, you know, you have to go out there and you have to perform, you know, at your highest level. And you have an opportunity now to kind of showcase it a little bit. So, and you're in a Kyle Shanahan offense. And, you know, George Kittle was pretty quiet last week. So against Philly, so I suspect that he's going to be a big part of the game plan, and also Debo. So you talk about being creative, and you've got a lot of weapons that you can be creative with. Your running game's important, but until these guys get up to speed, we're going to see what kind of play caller Kyle Shanahan is.
And he has another running weapon that everybody was talking about during training camp and in week one, but all of a sudden he's kind of flown under the radar, and that's the rookie quarterback Trey Lance, who, you know, by running weapon, I'm not saying he necessarily needs to be the one carrying the football, but he could be out on that field as a decoy, as somebody who takes the defense in a different direction than where the ball's actually going. So when you look at this rushing attack, Matt, you know how Kyle Shanahan thinks in situations like this. He's going to get creative, right? And he has the ability to do some interesting stuff. For example, Jaquez Patrick, the running back to the 49ers, picked up. He's a 230-pound back. He's a bruiser. We're out there at practice. We're impressed by his size. He might be able to soften the defense a little in some short yardage situations, or maybe even run the outside zone and bowl over some defensive backs. But that's an interesting dynamic that the 49ers now have in the room that they didn't have before. And obviously Trey Lance is a dynamic that they didn't have in years prior, but they have now. Might we see either one of those two guys or both of those guys to kind of kickstart this rushing attack without Raheem Mostert and Jeff Wilson and Jamichael Hasty?
Yeah, I mean, I'll start with Patrick. 230 pounds, like you mentioned, but I think that the key point is that he played in Cincinnati the last 2 years, and the head coach there, Zach Taylor, is a Sean McVay disciple. And Sean McVay is a Kyle Shanahan disciple. So there's not, you know, it's not the same offense, certainly not the same plays. But I don't think his learning curve is as high as, you know, any random guy off the street. And I think that's probably went into why they signed him. So he could definitely get into the game. And I really think that Trey Lance gets into the game. If you want to go with Lance to really kind of hamstring a defense, you do it in a week that they don't have a lot of time to prepare. And the Packers played on Monday night. This is a short week for them. They have to go all the way to the West Coast. So this seems like a really good week to break out Lance. I don't know. We can create an over-under for the number of snaps he gets. But Shanahan, you know, is liable to do anything. It could be a whole drive that Lance plays. He can do whatever he wants, and I think Shanahan really kind of relishes the surprise element in that. And Dennis, my bet is that we see more than four snaps, which was what Lance got in the week one game, and of course he got zero against the Eagles in week two.
That's interesting, and it kind of makes sense when you talk about playing on a short week. You got to get on an airplane, you got to fly across the country, You know, guys are still a little beat up from their Monday night football game. You know, you're going into Levi's Stadium where you've pretty much got owned in Levi's Stadium. And then you throw another wrinkle into it. I mean, you got a physical defense. You got a young offensive line in Green Bay. And then all of a sudden you come up with this rookie running back. So I like that concept. And I can see something like that happening. I just worry, you know, you put Trey Lance in there and you can see, I mean, he's basically a quarterback that's a running back. I hate to see him go out there and kind of get himself banged up. But I like that concept. I like that idea or that game plan, just keeping the defense even more on its heels by not knowing or not being able to prepare. But something tells me that every team that plays against the 49ers, there's some part of their practice that they get ready for a Trey Lance because they know he's a weapon and he's just sitting on the sidelines waiting to jump in. So, but it would be interesting seeing more, you know, than the four snaps and no snaps last week. And everyone wants to see, you know, the new shiny toy. But I just don't want him to get out there and get himself banged up.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
I think it's fitting that the 49ers are playing the Packers because Green Bay has famously struggled against both types of run game that I think we'll see the 49ers try to implement on Sunday night. Obviously, in 2012 and 2013, the Packers could not stop Colin Kaepernick and the quarterback zone read and the quarterback run. And then very famously in January 2020, the last time that fans were in Levi's Stadium, the Packers were historically bad on run defense against the 49ers when Raheem Mostert scored four touchdowns. And I think it was, 7 yards a carry, something like that for the Kyle Shanahan's offense in that game. So Aaron Rodgers is the constant for Green Bay. He's been the quarterback on the opposite end of those very poor defensive efforts. And obviously he's lost all of those games. In fact, Aaron Rodgers has never beaten a winning 49ers team. He's 5-6. In his career against the 49ers, he's 0-6 against the winning team. So that was the Kaepernick, Alex Smith era back in 2012 and 2013. And then obviously the 49ers in 2019 were a winning team when they beat the Packers twice. And Green Bay just could not stop the run. So now we'll see if the 49ers can make it hurt against Green Bay on the ground again, even with that running back room in such question. But the offensive line is healthy. And also the Packers have really struggled in coverage throughout the first two games of this season. Matt, back in 2019, before the 49ers took on the Packers, I remember still on this pregame show, we said the 49ers aren't going to pass a lot because Green Bay has a decent pass rush with Za'Darius Smith and Preston Smith. They have a decent pass defense, but they have a terrible run defense. So why should the 49ers even bother passing? They could just run it right down their throats. It's exactly what happened. Now you fast forward 2 years, and Za'Darius Smith, the Packers' top pass rusher, is on IR. He's not going to play. They haven't been able to pressure the quarterback. That means that Green Bay has no strengths defensively. They're not good against the pass. They're not good against the run. I think that plays into the 49ers' favor for very obvious reasons.
Yeah, I'm sure the Packers are very happy that Mostert isn't in this game because if he were there, you know, it would be a very, very tough game for them. And, of course, we saw that happen in January of 2020. You're right about their defensive line. No Za'Darius Smith. They've got Preston Smith in there, and they've got Rashawn Gary, who I remember because we were looking at pass rushers in that 2019 draft, and he was one of the top ones. And the 49ers ended up getting a guy named Nick Bosa, and I think they're very happy with that pick. And Gary is doing well. He's probably their best pass rusher, their most explosive pass rusher. But, he's been inconsistent. I'd say the arrow is up with him, but not burning hot like Nick Bosa has been these first two games. And to me, that's really going to be the story when Aaron Rodgers has the ball. I think the Packers would love to go deep to Davante Adams, Marcus Valdez-Scantling. They were just off a few times in that game against the Lions the other night. He could have had more than 100 yards if Rodgers had better connection with him. And I think that's something that's going to sharpen over the course of time on that team. But the question is, can you attack the 49ers cornerbacks deep if Dee Ford and Bosa are coming off the edges? And the Packers have injury issues at the tackle position. No Eric Bakhtiari for this game. His backup, Elton Jenkins, is dealing with an ankle injury. He's sort of questionable for this game as well. So it's not just the 49ers fans or listeners out there who have injury issues. Other teams do as well. And the Packers have a big one, I think, on their offensive line.
Yeah, and that's going to be the key to the game. I think the 49ers defensive front and the Packers offensive line, because you're talking about they have a guard who's in his second year. They have a center's first year and another guard that's in his first year. So right in the middle there, you got some rookies. You got some draft picks in the middle that you can attack. I think, you know, this team is physical, and I think Green Bay Packers kind of have an issue with teams that are really physical. But if you watch that tape against Philly, I'm sure they did, you're going to know that Aaron Rodgers is going to want to go deep. So I think Jaquiski Tartt and Jimmy Ward are going to have to have fantastic games to kind of help some of the cornerbacks. Because you look at that Philly game, and early in the game, they gave up some pretty big plays, some big yards. So, but I think the game is going to be won or lost in the trenches, like always. But I think advantage 49ers, especially against this Green Bay offensive line.
Absolutely. And when the 49ers played Green Bay both times in 2019 with a similar defensive line, obviously now minus DeForest Buckner in 2021, the 49ers faced the Green Bay offensive line that was ranked number one in the NFL in pass protection. But both times, the 49ers absolutely overwhelmed them. It was crazy in that first matchup, which I think very arguably was the worst game of Aaron Rodgers' career. The statistics at least think so. He had his lowest yards per attempt, adjusted yards per attempt ever. In all of his 16 years, Aaron Rodgers had never had a worse game statistically. And the one thing that stood out to me is that, you know, with the tracking data, they are able to keep tabs on how far throws go downfield. The average Aaron Rodgers completion went negative 0.7 yards downfield in that 49ers-Packers game in 2019. That shows you how dominant the 49ers defensive line was against, again, a very good top-of-the-league Packers offensive line. So now you don't have Bakhtiari. You might not have Elkton Jenkins. And they don't have Corey Linsley either, who is an all-pro center who signed with the Chargers this past offseason. So even though the 49ers don't have DeForest Buckner, I have to think they're still going to have a leg up on this Green Bay offensive line. Obviously, last week, Philadelphia did some good things blocking, but that is one of the top O-lines in the game. Green Bay, even though they're still good, they're just a bad matchup. The 49ers are a bad matchup for them. And if it goes any way along the lines of 2019, Matt, Aaron Rodgers won't have too much time to test the 49ers cornerbacks, and I think that has to be the 49ers' plan, because if Aaron Rodgers gets comfortable, things are going to go downhill in a hurry.
Yeah, and you could even argue that the 49ers have better edge presence than they did during that regular season 2019 game. Nick Bosa was in that game. I'm not sure if Dee Ford was healthy at that point. My recollection is that he wasn't. And there certainly wasn't a Samson Ebukam. I think Ronald Blair had gotten hurt by that point. The 49ers, I mean, obviously there's no DeForest Buckner, and that's a big deal. But like I said, the edges, which is where the Packers are a little shoddy right now as far as protection on the offensive line, that's where the 49ers are starting to rev up and sort of flex their muscle. Because I think Bosa would tell you that he's still rounding into form. He's only getting better over the first half of the season after missing most of last year. And, you know, we're Ebukam has had some good snaps. He's, you know, he's playing a different position. He's going to get better as time goes on. Ford's going to get better, presumably, as time goes on. So, like I said, crowd noise, energy, adrenaline, and these guys springing off the edge. It'll be interesting to see what Matt LaFleur does, because, like I said, you know, you would think that attacking the cornerbacks would be the way to go, which is what the Eagles did. But, you know, it may be that he realizes his quarterback is not going to have the time to do that, and they turn to more underneath stuff, which means, Fred Warner needs to have a big game. Azeez Al-Shaair didn't play all that great, I didn't think, against the Eagles. He needs to have a big game. And then the safeties, as Dennis mentioned, need to come up, and instead of playing deep, they're playing more in the center of the field and along the line of scrimmage, which they're both perfectly capable of. That's sort of an under-reported storyline this year, is that those two safeties, those two guys who are really they're the most tenured guys on this team, them and Dante Johnson, are playing really well and are a real asset for this defense.
You know, they got a lot of history. If I'm not mistaken, didn't they play in high school together, Jimmy Ward and Jaquaski Tartt?
Yeah.
I mean, they've known each
Mobile,
other forever.
Alabama. Yeah.
Yeah. Last week, I think Jaquaski played one of his better games last year. He only had that one breakup, but I think he was really good on his coverage. But it all happens with the pressure, and that's what they need to continue to do. And they had a lot of pressure last week. And we don't talk about Eric Armstead a lot, but he had six pressures last week. So he was in the quarterback's face, and he's going to get some of those sacks. We know Nick Bosa, he had the two sacks, but he had pressures. He had three pressures. Javon Kinlaw had two pressures. Dee Ford had two pressures. So that's what you need against Aaron Rodgers, because if he sits in the pocket – he can pick you apart, because once you try to blitz him, you know, he knows the blitz busters. He knows how to beat a blitz. He's seen all the different coverages. You're probably not going to bait him, but you got to get pressure with your four down linemen. You have to get pressure on him, and that's what they did the NFC Championship game, the two games last season in Levi Stadium. That's what they did. They just got after him. And then if you get him flustered a little bit and not let him get comfortable in the pocket, he can't throw down the field. But Aaron Rodgers is a good quarterback, and he's going to bounce back. You saw he had one of his worst games that first game of the season. Then he came Monday Night Football, and he looked like the old Aaron Rodgers. So, you know, he's throwing balls off his back foot. He's throwing balls across his body. He's a good quarterback. And if you let him get comfortable in the pocket and let him start seeing the defenses, you don't disguise something, or you don't pressure him, he can make it for a long day, because he is one of the elite quarterbacks in this league.
Well, we saw exactly that last season, really the forgotten game that the 49ers would really like to forget about. In 2020, they were missing almost everybody, it seemed, in that game. On top of all the injuries, there was some COVID stuff that happened that week, so they didn't have Trent Williams. Richie James ended up having a big game because all of the wide receivers were out. So it was like River Craycraft and Richie James and Trent Taylor, I believe. So the only really positive coming out of that game was the 200-plus receiving yards for Richie. But Aaron Rodgers was unbothered, because obviously Nick Bosa was long gone at that point after the ACL tear. And Aaron Rodgers put up, 40 points on the 49ers, whatever it was. It was a long night, a Thursday night in week 10, I believe, maybe week 9. It was right after that loss against Seattle in the 49ers season. Was circling down the drain in a hurry. So you had quite the juxtaposition. Two games in 2019 that I thought were nearly identical. The 49ers with their front four overwhelming a very good Packers offensive line and overwhelming Aaron Rodgers and blowing him out both times. And then you had 2020 without Bosa, without those pass rushers, and without a whole lot more pieces. And it was Aaron Rodgers taking it to the 49ers. Obviously, the personnel this time, at least entering this game, suggest that it's going to be closer to 2019 than 2020, especially because the Packers are a little bit beaten up and they're missing a few guys this time. But you never know until they actually play the game. And you know, Matt, this is one of those games that could become a little bit more interesting than just our projections on paper, because there's a little bit of drama, right? The 49ers made a call about Aaron Rodgers this offseason while all those dramatics were going on in Green Bay. Kyle Shanahan maintains that it was just a due diligence call. He's just checking in to see if Rodgers was available. He got a quick no and he hung up. But according to some stuff that came out today, Matt LaFleur over in Green Bay thought that the 49ers were doing a little bit of meddling, that he thought that John Lynch might have been trying to talk to Aaron Rodgers behind the scenes, and they didn't really trust the 49ers. They thought the 49ers were doing more than just doing an oh-what-the-heck check-in. And supposedly, if Mike Silver's tweets are all true, there was a little bad blood this offseason between friends, between Matt LaFleur and Kyle Shanahan. And even if that's, water under the bridge at this point, you still have to think that these two guys are going to want to beat each other extra bad if there was some sort of disagreement about Aaron Rodgers in the offseason.
Yeah, apparently there is bad blood between House Shanahan and House LaFleur, and that it wasn't just a due diligence quick call. There was a suspicion from Green Bay that it was the 49ers who were sort of instigating all of this dissatisfaction that Aaron Rodgers has had with the Packers organization, and sort of kind of leading him to believe that maybe the 49ers were at the waiting for them at the end of the rainbow to kind of swoop him up. That to me, obviously there are degrees to that. The 49ers certainly didn't start all the bad feelings that Rodgers and the Green Bay front office have had. Were they trying to take advantage of it? I think in some way they were, but probably all 31 other teams would have as well. So it'll be interesting. We're going to talk to Kyle Shanahan later today, I'm sure he'll be asked about that, and I'm sure he'll slough it off as nothing. But it's one of those kind of palace intrigue things that's made all the more interesting because that Shanahan coaching tree is so extensive. And these two teams, and I think that the call that Mike Silver was referring to was between the 49ers and the Jets, where Mike LaFleur, the 49ers' former assistant, is now the offensive coordinator under Robert Saleh. So it's not just two teams here, it's three teams that are involved. Dennis, there's just a lot of drama going on, and behind it is always quarterbacks.
Well, they're pretty important. It sounds like there is a lot of drama. I haven't heard about much of this drama, but when you have a prima donna or one of the best quarterbacks in the league like Aaron Rodgers, and he's upset, I mean, you wouldn't be doing your team right or your franchise right if you didn't make a phone call and what's going on. Can we help you out? I mean, you're from California. Hey, you played here. You thinking about coming back? Maybe it's an unwritten rule that, that's something you don't do. But when you have a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers, I'm sure, the fan base would love to see Aaron Rodgers as a 49er. I mean, because he is that quarterback. He is a game changer. He's proven it year in and year out. So, it sounds like a lot of drama. It sounds like a lot of ego, too. But again, you're talking about one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. For sure, a Hall of Famer.
Well, maybe, Dennis, this is a little bit of a reminder of the old 49ers-Packers rivalry that you got to play in back in the 90s. When I wrote a big story about that a couple of years ago, Steve Young, his quote was, "It was a family fight back in the 90s." And this feels a little bit like a family fight, right? The LaFleurs against the Shanahans. But, for historical reference here, back in the 90s, the Packers had an assistant named Steve Mariucci who developed Brett Favre, and the 49ers had an assistant named Mike Holmgren who developed Steve Young. Those two assistants then flopped teams. Mike Holmgren became the head coach of the Green Bay Packers, so he was obviously coaching against his former pupil Steve Young, and Steve Mariucci became the head coach of the San Francisco 49ers, and he was obviously coaching against his former pupil Brett Favre. And then the two teams ended up playing in four straight years in the playoffs, with Green Bay winning the first three. I know, Dennis, your final career game was at Lambeau Field, so you've still expressed bitterness about that loss. But the 49ers finally got them when Steve Young threw the Terrell Owens, and that kind of ended this intensely personal family fight between two teams who were running the same playbook. They knew each other so well, and they wanted to beat each other so bad because of that almost brother-like familiarity. And Matt, that sounds a little familiar to me right now. The playbooks are similar, at least offensively, between Green Bay and the 49ers. I know the LaFleur tries to run a lot of the same stuff as Shanahan because obviously they're coming from the same tree. And it sounds like that familiarity might have sparked and might have lent itself to a little extra drama that you only get when two people and two staffs know each other fairly well.
We got a lot of storylines heading into this game, and I'm sure the NFL just loves it that way, that their primetime game on Sunday is just rife with, like we said, all sorts of drama. And you're right. I mean, we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that LaFleur basically runs the same offense as Shanahan. And we're talking about preparing on a short week. That's the Packers' advantage. Because I think we see it, is that when teams aren't used to playing that zone rushing attack, especially that stretch zone, when Raheem Mostert is in the game, that works so well. It's just hard to learn and to kind of become well versed in a week. And the Packers have that. And you know, I thought watching that Packers Lions game the other night, Dennis, that Aaron Jones, the running back, was the best player on the field. And he may be what the Packers try to ride to a win, because he's very talented. He's very quick. You know, perhaps the Packers sort of take advantage of all the adrenaline and all the aggression that attacking that the 49ers defense does, and tries to do a lot of misdirection, little throws back to Jones and to Davante Adams and to Robert Tonyan. But if I'm the Packers, I would figure out ways to get Aaron Jones the ball,
and you know, not just hand the ball off to him. If the game Monday night, it looked like he became kind of the third wide receiver. He had a lot of balls out the backfield to him, and you know, he's a physical runner. You get the ball in space, and him going one on one against a cornerback or a safety, I mean, it's advantage to him. So. And, you know, Davante Adams is Davante Adams. I mean, he blew up, right? He blew up Monday night. And, you know, him and Aaron Rodgers, they've got a lot of chemistry. They got great chemistry together. And that's why we've already talked about it. It's going to be important. Whoever's out there on the corners, you know, they have to play well. But, you know, Jimmy Ward and Jaquaski Tartt, they have to have probably one of their best games. Because if you watch that Philadelphia film, I mean, you got to believe Aaron Rodgers is going to, you know how Aaron Rodgers works. If someone goes down, and I think it was a game at Levi's Stadium, I think one of the cornerbacks went down and Aaron Rodgers just attacked whoever the next man up, threw like three or four balls straight there just to see, you know, what's going to happen. So Aaron Rodgers is an experienced quarterback. And if he can see something he can exploit in the defense, he's going to go after it. So, you know, the strong safety, free safety, corners, they have to have their best games against Aaron Rodgers.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
It'll be interesting to see who the 49ers start at cornerback. Obviously, they have the veteran Josh Norman. They have the rookie D'Amador Lenore, but they might have Emmanuel Mosley returning from his knee injury in this game. Mosley was one of the top two cornerbacks in training camp alongside Jason Verrett. I thought he had a great camp. If he's fully healthy, I think that he's going to slot into one of those starting roles, but maybe the 49ers feel that they still want to work him back slowly, in which case he wouldn't be one of the starters, and you'd go with Norman and Lenore again. But Mosley tossing his name into that mix would certainly make for some fascinating decisions for the 49ers. And I think you're right, Dennis. Safety play is going to have to be really good against Aaron Rodgers if that pass rush isn't hitting home at 2019 levels. I think so far in this season, the 49ers' pass rush has shown signs of its old monstrous self, but it hasn't been what it was throughout the first 10 weeks of or 12 weeks of 2019 and throughout the playoffs in that year quite yet. Maybe it's because DeForest Buckner's not here, but I think the main reason, though, is that other teams are ready for the 49ers now. The quick passing game is huge. I think that's going to be big for Green Bay. Rodgers was extremely efficient against Detroit with the quick passing game. Most of his stuff, you know, productivity, like his expected points added in that game, if you want to get really advanced with it, most of that came on throws that traveled less than 2 yards past the line of scrimmage, if you look at the analytics of that game. So he's going to Devontae Adams, he's going to Randall Cobb, he's going to Aaron Jones on very quick throws, which means the corners have to be ready to tackle, and I think Fred Warner and Azeez Al-Shaair are going to have to be ready to fly to the football, fly into the flats, and not give the Packers 5 free yards on these quick Aaron Rodgers throws. Because, Matt, you know it's coming to try to mitigate that 49ers blitz.
Yeah, and Al-Shaair did fly to the ball, I think, against the Eagles. The problem was that he sometimes flew past the ball. It felt like he was moving too fast or not in control sometimes and came away with 3 missed tackles. After he had 2 missed tackles against the Lions. So that's something that he's got to work on because he does have the speed to get there. He and Warner are probably going to have really big days. And I think that Azeez has the potential to do that. He's just not putting it all together. And I think what Dennis was referring to earlier was the Greg Maven game. In Green Bay a few years ago, that was a game where the 49ers were teaching Akello Witherspoon a lesson. And so they kept him on the sideline in the game. He had been a starter to that point in the season. And they started Jimmy Ward at cornerback. And Ward did a great job. But then Ward got hurt. And Greg Maven came in. And Dennis is right. As soon as Greg Maven came into that game, a guy that had not had a lot of experience, it was as if Aaron Rodgers turned into a hungry wolf. And he saw that, and he exploited it, and it was the difference in the game. He just went after him over and over again. At the end of the game, big touchdown pass, and the Packers come from behind and win an emotional game. So that's why I think if Emmanuel Mosley is back for this game, the other cornerback will be Josh Norman. I don't know that for sure. That's my guess. To kind of save D'Amador Lenore from having to face a quarterback that just feasts on young, inexperienced guys like him. So that's how I see it happening. But I also remember that game very well.
It was almost sad because it seemed like every snap it was to that side, whatever side maybe he was on, it was to his side. But that's what you're supposed to do. I mean, it's kind of bullyish, but that's the quarterback Aaron Rodgers is. I mean, he knows how to exploit. I mean, he's not going to – and this is not a good game. If Mosley's coming back, this is not a good game for a bad knee either, because I'm sure, you know, Aaron Rodgers knows that too, and he'll test that too. But it all comes down to the trenches. It always comes down to the trenches. And if the 49ers offense can be consistent, more consistent, play 4 quarters, you know, not play a half or play 3 quarters. You be consistent, You contain Aaron Rodgers. You get some pressure in his face. You don't let Davante Adams kill you. And you can come out victorious at home and be 3-0.
Well, you know that Aaron Rodgers wants to get Mosley back because earlier in the show, Dennis, you said it's very rare that Aaron Rodgers gets baited into an interception. Well, the one 49er who's baited him into an interception is Emmanuel Mosley in that NFC Championship game. That was a huge play. I think it allowed the 49ers to go up 27-0 a couple snaps later because Raheem Mostert ran in for another touchdown. It was either 27 or 30-0 at halftime of that game, but Mosley, probably with some help from Richard Sherman, who helped the 49ers' young cornerbacks really get on top of the P's and Q's of the cerebral part of the game, he baited Aaron Rodgers, and he was waiting for that interception. So you have to believe that if he's back at the game, there might be a little bit of a vengeance play there from the old veteran who's now in his 17th year in the National Football League. So just a lot of cool subplots, I think, back and forth in this game that we can track because Rodgers has been around for so long, since 2005, right? So he's played bad 49ers teams. He's played the Harbaugh era great 49ers teams. He played the great 2019 49ers team, the terrible injury-riddled 2020 49ers JV team, and now here he is, and it looks like this is another good 49ers team in 2021, and we're still not sure who the Packers are going to be, right? I mean, this is for them, this is such a big game as far as an inflection point early in the season. They just got destroyed by the Saints 38-3 in week one, and they were losing early to the Lions, who aren't any good in week two. So nothing that Green Bay did in week two should convince people that they're somehow over the very alarming performance in week one. But if they beat the 49ers here in week three on the road, Matt, the Packers will have announced that they are indeed contenders again here in 2021. So this game means a whole heck of a lot to Green Bay from a playoff chase standpoint and from a pride standpoint. So there's going to be a lot on the line on Sunday Night Football.
Yeah, you always want to beat one of the teams that you expect will be there, that you're competing with for playoff seeding at the end of the season. And the 49ers are in that category as well. Not only are they competing against the Packers, but they've got a very, very tough division, tougher than the NFC North. So, all of these games are critical early on. You don't want to kind of fall behind in this division because it's already showing that it's a fantastic division. And, you know, one more storyline that we haven't touched on, this is almost a perennial one with Aaron Rodgers, is the fact that, you know, the 49ers passed on this guy in that 2005 draft, and he really badly, badly wanted to come here. And I remember him saying a couple of times, I'm going to make the 49ers pay for taking Alex Smith and not me, and making me suffer through the agony of that famous first round. He really hasn't, though. As good as he is and as good as the teams that he's been on, he's won some games against the 49ers for sure. But you're right, the big ones, the playoff games certainly, in Green Bay, in Levi Stadium, in Candlestick, those have all been won by the 49ers. So it seems like the big matchups in the Aaron Rodgers era have all gone to San Francisco.
And Matt, do you think he's over that by now? 17 years ago?
I don't think somebody like that ever gets over that.
You think he's still got that chip?
They wear that on their shoulder for the rest of their lives.
Like I said, I still think the 49ers have got Aaron Rodgers' number. I mean, I think they pretty much own the Green Bay Packers and Aaron Rodgers. So, you know, we'll see. But one thing we do know, I mean, after these next two home games, the Packers on Sunday and then the following week against the Seahawks, I think we'll see kind of what the 49ers team, see what we're working with here and what, you know, moving forward. But it's so important to just stack wins. I mean, in this division, in this conference, you know, it's so important just to get the wins any way you can. Ugly, like I said, that win against Detroit in week 17, it'll just be a W, and that's going to be the important thing to keep stacking wins moving forward.
Question for you, Dennis, is have you gotten over the Packers beating you in your final game there back in January 97?
You know, I have not because it was raining, and we were wearing those white throwbacks.
Aha! Uh-huh.
And we were muddy.
We were muddy, baby. Full circle.
Defensive linemen, we were covered with mud, and it was freezing cold, and those white jerseys just soaked up all the mud. So, no, I have not gotten over it.
For 2 years, I've wondered why Dennis loathes all white uniforms the way he does.
And it was probably the worst day of my life.
This Sunday is Dennis's chance at a full circle exorcism, though, because the 49ers are finally putting on the uniforms they're supposed to put on.
Yes.
The red version of those throwbacks, right?
Right.
And they are going to try to beat the Green Bay Packers. So maybe finally. Yes. After this game, Dennis, you'll be able to let go. I believe that you will be able to, because I think the 49ers are going to go out there and throttle the Packers. I'm not going to be shy about this. I think they're so much better on both lines of scrimmage that I think that even if they don't quite have the 2019 advantage, it'll be enough to win by two scores. I say 34-20. Dennis, what do you think? Do you think that it's going to come true for you, and do you think you'll finally be able to forget about the all-white uniforms?
It's kind of stitched in my brain now, so I can't. But I do think the 49ers come out. They come out in the throwbacks. I think they get after Aaron Rodgers. I think Aaron Rodgers has a decent game. But I think, you know, in the trenches, I think this offensive line just doesn't, you know, they just can't handle this 49er goal rush, pass rush. I think the 49ers offensive line with one of the Smith brothers missing, I think Jimmy Garoppolo has a big day. So I'm going to say 31-24. 49ers.
I'm going to go something very similar, 30-20, 49ers. I think that, like we said, they're going to try to use that quick passing game. They'll get Devontae Adams involved. They'll get Aaron Jones involved. But it won't be enough for them. They'll muster some modicum of offense. But this will be the 49ers' day. And I don't want to say they deserve it, but like I said earlier, no team went through more road hell last year than the 49ers. So playing their first real home game since then, I think it will be a poetic win for the home team.
Gonna be fun. Well, everybody tune in after the game on Sunday. For Matt Barrows and Dennis Brown, this is David Lombardi. We'll talk to you next time on the Here's the Catch 49ers podcast.
Hey, hey. Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.